Good afternoon. Welcome to the Environment and Energy and Natural Resources Budget Division. First bill up today will be Senate File 71, Senator Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of this committee. I'd like to, before I get started, show you a map. And I think you've seen this map before, but just to refresh your memories of why I'm here today. About a year ago, I came to this committee as part of the bonding bill to request funding for the cleanup of the Washington County landfill, which has been the source of the 3M PFBA chemicals within the water supply in central Washington County. And at the time, I didn't have a map to show you the extent of this, but I have a very colorful district, so at this time, I'd just like to hold that up for you. Washington County landfill is at the top of the map, and you can see that the plume of water that has come from this particular site has spread throughout Woodbury. There are some other sites as well, but you can see that it's affected the drinking water of about 60,000 people. So thank you, Kent, for reminding. So this really has been an issue that we've dealt with, and 3M has been extremely cooperative working with the cleanup efforts. So when the PCA determined that they really wanted to clean this site up, there were many different approaches that were brought forward. Being able to do what is a dig and fill, which is where they dig up the current landfill, which is unlined, which is contaminating the groundwater, to be then replaced in a triple liner that to keep it there. We did look at the dig and truck options were extremely expensive. So we've worked with the local community, but cleaning up this site is very important to really limit the continuing source of this contamination. I have with me today is Mayor Dean Johnston, who is from Lake Elmo, and obviously this impacts many communities, but especially Lake Elmo, because this is the site of this. The bill today that we'll be hearing about, we have already had passed some bonding authority to pay for this landfill, but there were some concerns with the language and the ability to sell the bonds. And so the bill today is to change the language, and Mr. Knopf can explain that for you, so that the bonds can be sold. The project has been started because 3M has appropriated the $8 million of about the $20 million needed to clean up this site.
Senator Salzman, should we have Mr. Knopf do that before Mayor Johnston speaks?
That would be a good idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Go ahead, Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, what you have here is a bill to take care of an issue that came up in last year's bonding bill. For those of you who remember last year, in the bonding bill, there was $25 million in revenue bonds that were appropriated to the Pollution Control Agency for cleaning up the closed landfills in the state. And what happened is the bonds could not be sold. It's a tricky area of the Constitution in that let me just read the sentence. Public debt includes any obligations payable directly in whole or in part from a tax, a statewide application on any class of property income, transaction, or privilege. So in other words, the Constitution says that it has to be a general obligation bond if there's a tax of statewide significance used. The state has done some revenue bonds based on fees in the past, so the Cambridge Bank, for those of you who remember the Cambridge Bank bonds. The attempt last year was to sell these as revenue bonds using the motor vehicle transfer fee as the source of revenue to repay the bonds, similar to what has been done with other fees. But when bond council looked at this, they said we knew this was a potential problem last year, but thought it was worth trying anyways. The bond council looked at the motor vehicle transfer fee and said this could be determined to be a tax of statewide significance. So they determined that they couldn't sell the bonds based on using that fee as the source of revenue to repay the bonds. So what this bill does this year is change that to user-financed general obligation bonds. So they're still general obligation bonds of the state, but they are user-financed. And instead of the motor vehicle transfer fee, that money does go into the environmental fund. Basically, the whole environmental fund is used for the repayment of the debt service on these bonds. So basically, it's really the money is no different from last year. It's just that the bonds will be classified as user-financed general obligation rather than revenue bonds. Otherwise, the financial aspects of this are identical to what would have been in last year's bonding bill.
Okay, is any questions of the committee on the explanation? Okay.
So to add to this, Mr. Chair, if
yes,
I might.
Yes, Senator Salzman.
I know that when I brought this bill to you last year, asking for $15 million at the time to clean up a landfill was a lot of money, especially when we had many other needs in our bonding bill. And so I tried to find a different source of paying off the bond so that this is not counted against our 3% bonding cap. And so that also remains here. So this is not counted against the 3% coming through the environmental fund. Is that correct, Mr. Knopf?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as I understand the 3% cap, and it's not in law anywhere, that's just what an agreement. As I understand it, it only applies to the bonds that are where the debt service is paid from the general fund.
Okay. Senator Salzman, this is an aside, but now the offering of these bonds or the cleanup of this site in this particular manner, it doesn't affect any other cleanup projects or neighboring communities or?
You know, I'd like to have the MPCA address that. I would argue that if we are not able to identify other sources of funding for this project, the Washington County project is going to go forward and other projects may be delayed. So
okay.
In putting together a package, we also named not just Washington County, but if you look on lines 219, there were other landfills named as well that were able to qualify for these dollars, so that it wasn't just, it was really to speed up the fact that the MPCA does not have the funding to clean up the existing needs. But I will let them address
okay.
that.
Well, we'll ask Mr. Lewis after the mayor gives his testimony. Mayor Johnston, would you identify yourself and go ahead?
My name is Dean Johnston. I am the mayor of the city of Lake Elmo. Senator Anderson and committee members, thank you very much for taking the time to hear this about this important issue. I'll be brief because you know from last year, I mean, we talked and I get reminded daily that public health and safety is our number one priority. I have constituents who believe that they have lost loved ones from the groundwater contamination. I have many constituents who are quite anxious because they're drinking groundwater that from their private wells that are very near the health limits. And it's one side of the limit or the other. There's really very, very little that is new from the perspective of the Lake Elmo residents. It's a very important project. It's a health and safety project We appreciate your taking the time to address it, and we're looking forward to a positive outcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Johnston. Any questions for the mayor? Okay. Mr. Lewis, could you answer the question that we kind of – I think you probably heard it. Go ahead and identify yourself and help us with the neighboring communities and the whole pollution idea. This is about bonding now. We understand that, but go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Lewis. I actually manage the closed landfill program at the MPCA. To address the question, let me be kind of brief, but try and expand a little bit. There's several programs that are funded out of the remediation fund at the MPCA. Basically, we fund our Superfund construction activities as well as the closed landfill construction activities out of the remediation fund. The closed landfill program has relied on bonding money, monies from basically it comes out of the garbage tax by way of the environmental fund. And then a third source has been insurance recovery monies that we've obtained from companies that used to have policies on the landfills we took over. We are basically at a point now where we have to move forward with the Washington County landfill because of the health impacts that are occurring. We will let bids on that project. They're scheduled to be let on the 28th of March. I'm sorry, they're advertised on the 28th. They'll be actually be let on the 15th of April. That will be somewhere around a $28 million project. Currently, we have some monies in hand from 3M to start the project, but by the year 2012, we will not have funding sources available to pay for that without making drastic adjustments to other work that we do. We would have to stop construction at any other site in the closed landfill program. We'd have to make major adjustments to the O&M activities that we do at the existing 112 landfills that we manage in order to keep that Washington County project moving forward. So, you know, we're okay for FY10 in the program and for moving Washington County forward. Starting in FY11, we'll have to start holding back on several construction projects that we wanted to move forward. And by FY12, we'd be in a situation where even to keep just Washington County moving, we'd have to make major adjustments to the work we do.
Questions for Mr. Lewis? Okay, sir. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Anybody else wish to give any testimony for the project? How about, is there anybody who wishes to speak against it? All right.
Mr. Chairman, if we don't have any more testimony, I would like to move the bill.
All right. Senator Torres Ray moves that Senate File 71 be passed and sent to the bonding committee?
Full committee.
Full.
I believe so.
This is.
Go ahead, Mr. Crown.
Mr. Chairman, I think with the bonding provisions that are just being set aside or laid over for possible inclusion in the list that's going to be forwarded to the Senate Capital Investment Committee. Is the way I understand, we were doing okay. All the bonding bills.
Okay. Senate File 71 be moved past and set aside to go on a possible list of bonding bills?
sorry. I'm trying to eat my lunch. I apologize. I just think things that are actual policy, perhaps we should pass as a separate bill. But generally speaking, the money request, we are just we're going to send a letter to Senator Langseth. I think he's passing the bill tonight, so we want to deliver it to him before then.
Okay.
I guess I would ask Senator Salzman what your preference is.
This could be included in the bonding bill. Sorry. It's not. I guess I will leave that up to Senator Langseth.
All right. So we're Senator Salzman, if we pass this and send this on to the Capital Investment Committee?
We send it to Finance.
To full Finance. Okay.
Senator Salzman, sorry. I do think it's important, regardless of Senator Langseth's committee process, that our committee gives its official stamp of approval. I mean, this has very significant budget impacts off into the future for the work that we support in this committee, so we just need to.
Thank you very much, Senator Anderson. I appreciate that very much.
All right. Senator Torres Ray moves that Senate File 71 be passed and sent to the full Finance Committee. Any other questions, discussion? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you very much, Senator Salzman. Mr. Chair and members. I really appreciate this, as do the members of my community. So,
Senator Stumpf here? Oh, Senator Stumpf's not here. Who should we? Okay. Senator Frederickson? We have Senate File 375. Senator Frederickson. Marshall Wind Energy and Ethanol Fuel Training Facilities Construction Authorization. Senator Frederickson?
Mr. Chairman, members. This bill would change the language, not the dollars, in a provision that was in last year's bonding bill. Just a quick explanation of what the Merit Center is. It's located in Marshall, and it's to cover emergency training for all of Southwest Minnesota. It was built as a result of a statewide study some 10, 12 years ago of placing emergency training facilities around the state. The one for Southwest Minnesota is in Marshall. They have a building there, a hazard material response vehicle is located there, a tower simulating a high-rise building that the firefighters can train in. They have a couple things they'd like to accomplish at the Merit Center. First of all, they would like to provide more classrooms, more training facilities at the site. And that's what the pre-design is for in this bill. The existing law says this $300,000 is for pre-design. But last year, they came in later in the process and asked that we change this to allow for training facilities for wind energy, wind towers, rescue, and emergency response, and also to change it to allow them to install facilities to simulate fighting an ethanol fire. And I understand ethanol fires are very dangerous, very hard to contain. And I was told today that when they simulate ethanol fires, they aren't even allowed to use ethanol. They use propane gas and simulate it that way because ethanol is so dangerous. Last year, when we changed the purpose, we didn't include construct and equip the wind energy and ethanol fuel training facilities. So they are ready to start putting in place the ethanol and wind energy training facilities, but they can't access this money because the law says it is only for pre-design, not to construct and equip. And there is some time urgency to this because I understand one of the industries that was going to make a significant contribution of equipment to this site is wondering what's taking so long, and they're afraid that if it doesn't move forward fairly soon, that their industry partners might back off of the project. So, Mr. Chairman, that's what the project is. It just changes a little bit the direction of $300,000 that appropriated last year. And quite honestly, I thought we had made this change last year, and it didn't appear in the final bill.
Thank you, Senator Frederickson. Do you have any additional testifiers?
Mr. Chairman, Rob Yant, the chief of police at Marshall, was going to come in, and because of the weather, I took the liberty of saying don't come in for it. I don't think that his testimony would be necessary. And Don Beckering from Minsky is here if you have questions about that part of the project.
Anybody on the committee have questions for Senator Frederickson on the project? Again, we're just making a kind of an addition that we should have made last year.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, is there any use of this money for design? I notice you have pre-design and then you go right to construct. Did the pre-design include design or?
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, I believe the pre-design would be for the training classrooms and the other facilities. It would not be for the ethanol and wind energy. And I don't think they would have enough money with $300,000 to both do pre-design and design. Mr. Chairman, I would like to double-track this bill because there is some urgency. I'd like to pass the bill on to the full finance and also have it included in the letter to Senator Langseth.
Okay. First of all, is there any other people that need to testify or want to testify? Any comments from the committee?
One more comment.
Ms. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Frederickson, I just wanted to make one comment. You're probably aware of this, but just to make sure, this would be a bonding bill with this change, and it would require a House file and a 60% vote if it moves separately.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, I am aware of that, and I'm also aware that there's another bill similar to this of Senator Fischbach that's passed out of finance and waiting on the floor.
Yeah.
And I'll be having some conversations with Senator Langseth and maybe Senator Fischbach to see if there's a way we could accomplish this together.
Okay, Senator Frederickson. I have Senator Frederickson move Senate File 375 and that it be passed and sent to double track to both the full Finance Committee and be included in the letter to the Capital Investment Committee. Any other discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Senator Frederickson. It's passed. Oh, good. I wonder if either one of them has their testifiers.
Is there anyone here to testify on Senator Stumpf's or Senator Murphy's bill?
Yes.
Which? Oh.
Senator Murphy's.
And you as well?
Senator Stumpf.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we'll take your testimony. Are you guys from out of town?
Yes.
Yeah. Come on up. We'll get started. I guess we can do that. We're trying to locate them in the building.
Senator Murphy gave me the lame excuse that he was chairing his committee right now.
Yeah, that's pretty lame. You know how it goes.
I'm sorry about that. Good afternoon. I'm Rick Mosca, the Public Works Director at the City of Red Wing, and I'm here to testify on Senate File 46, Red Wing Biosolids Processing Facility Bond Issue and Appropriation. Thank you for allowing me to testify today to discuss funding for an important regional renewable energy initiative. The initiative that the Red Wing City Council and our surrounding Wisconsin and Minnesota community neighbors pursue is very forward-thinking. It's construction and operation of a joint biosolids drying facility that would take municipal biosolids and dry them to produce a Class A fertilizer product. Biosolids, or sludge, are a byproduct of wastewater treatment. Historically, biosolids have been applied to land areas surrounding municipalities with little or no controversy as a fertilization supplement. The land application of municipal wastewater biosolids has become more administratively difficult and controversial. In addition, in order to comply with more stringent wastewater NPDES permit effluent discharge limits, the Clean Water Act, municipal wastewater treatment facilities are mandated to reduce phosphorus contained within wastewater discharges in our rivers, streams, and lakes. A direct result of phosphorus reduction efforts is the generation of additional biosolids, which our facility does not have the capacity to manage anymore. We currently land apply 2 times a year, and it cannot be injected onto the crops. It has to be injected into the soil. And as you know, we can only do that in the spring and the fall. We don't have enough area to do that or the time. The City of Red Wing has proposed to develop and construct a biosolids facility on land owned by the city on the same site as our waste-to-energy facility. Essentially, the proposed facility will utilize available and renewable steam energy generated by the city's municipal solid waste incinerator to process and dry the wet sludge. The final product, a dry powder-like substance, could easily be land-applied as a fertilizer supplement. It is approved to be spread on playgrounds and golf courses, which replaces the need for commercial fertilizers. Approval for the Class A drying of biosolids has been approved by the EPA for many years. Class A biosolids operations are used across the nation by larger cities and wastewater districts, but not by more smaller rural communities. The cost for energy is a major limitation of this option. The energy from the steam would replace the need for natural gas as the heat source. The finished product has 100% of the material's pathogens removed, has a much reduced volume, and would decrease trucking and post-process expenses. The city is already environmentally conscious as it operates a waste-to-energy facility, which burns our municipal solid waste and converts the heat to steam, which fuels the SB Foot Tannery, which is owned by the Red Wing Shoe Company. We've had a public-private partnership with that operation for 25 years now. This company's wastewater is also processed at that facility. We have excess steam that is currently being vented into the atmosphere, which is a loss of a renewable energy. with this drying process, we would use that steam to heat that biosolids and dry it right on the same site. One thing it does do is it eliminates us from having to burn gas. We can use the steam, which is a byproduct of the waste. The proposed biosolids facility will provide a regional location for biosolids processing for over 23 communities encompassing 11 different counties in Wisconsin and Minnesota, including the cities of Mazeppa and West Concord, working in coordination with the West Central Wisconsin Biosolids Facility located right across the river in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. In addition, the city has resolutions from the city of Kenyon, Lake City, Prairie Island Indian Community, and a business in Goodhue County to provide cost-effective solution for the disposal of their wastewater biosolids. Based upon final design, the facility could also provide an environmentally friendly and financially prudent solution to other Minnesota area communities facing biosolids storage and disposal limitations. The list of benefits of this program is long and the science is sound. The only drawback is a substantial capital investment. This request for $5 million in state funding to provide Red Wing as potential partners in this joint venture with financing to supplement other funding and financing needed to design and construct a regional biosolids processing facility adjacent to the city's municipal waste energy incinerators. Communities who are represented in this effort want to make the right decision for the long-term best interests of our residents and the environment. Finding appropriate funding could make this goal a reality. With Congress deliberating to establish renewable portfolio standard, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, this project with waste energy providing steam for drying and multi-entity interstate cooperation will provide more effective utilization of our regional resources. The Pro site has been a site for wastewater treatment and a waste management development initiatives for our environment since the early 70s for wastewater and 80s for waste. As we pursue funding options, we are initiating conversations with our state and federal representatives in Minnesota and Wisconsin in hopes that idea from many sources will yield a solution for our funding shortage. The total capital needed for a complete build-out is in excess of $9 million. The proposed project has a preliminary conceptual design stage right now. Ideally, we would like to begin construction in 2009 and become operational in 10. The City Council, Red Wing City Council, passed Resolution 5736 on September 24, 2007, supporting this important regional project. In conclusion, the City of Red Wing respectfully requests your support of Senate File 46. I thank the committee chair and members for the opportunity to be here to testify to you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions from the chair or members at this time.
Great. Thank you so much. Can you tell me, just tell me your name again? I missed that.
Rick. Moskwa, M-O-S-K-W-A.
M-O-S-K-W-A. Okay, Mr. Moskwa, thank you. Senator Murphy, welcome. He's done a great job without you. But there may be some things you want to say, too. So anything you want to add to the testimony?
Well, Madam Chairman, just a couple things. You know, Rick and I have been friends for a long time. And, you know, he has worked on this project I don't know, since day one of its inception. And I tell you, this is, you know, every now and again in your district, you run into something that's a little more exciting than other things. And I think that this qualifies. Madam Chair, I think this qualifies as a green project. I mean, this is a good thing. And when it comes to being able to use the residual of the product that comes out of it, Senator Dill. It has a lot of nutrient value, and so we've got people that are signing up all the time to use this. I think that there was only one township that kind of looked the other way on it.
But yeah.
Otherwise, everybody else is on board.
Well, Senator Murphy, what do you mean there? Is there some local? I was going to ask if all the local community is on board and supportive of this project. Is there some local opposition to it?
No. You have to have a wastewater treatment facility to process this. So townships, you know, they just have their septics, which get drained out, which get hauled to our city, and then we process those, or they go to the West Central Wisconsin facility. This encompasses an area, these communities of 25, 26 communities from Highway 8 in Wisconsin, south to below Pepin, Wisconsin, and as far over as 35 in Minnesota. So we're talking a huge geographical area, a population of close to 95,000, but it's a very rural area. And what happens is with the new phosphorus reduction, one part per million, it's straining us, and it's straining the West Central Wisconsin group as well, and that's why we got together. This is where two states are getting together, communities are getting together. Prairie Island Indian Community is also signed on as a resolution on this, because this is a process that's not going away. We are going to have more biosolids created as we get more legislation from the level, federal level, and more mandates. This is how we have to try to process it in the future to take care
of it. So I'm not quite following why the stricter standards is creating more biosolids product. Is that because more
the
you're
phosphorus
getting more water?
Reduction? The we have a one part per million.
You have to take out more.
Yes, you take out more because
more
of
solids.
That. Yes, and we now do not have. And our plant is located right on the Mississippi River. We're landlocked. We have a bluff on one side and the river here. We don't have enough room to put a storage tank there. Where we are going to look at putting it is right where our waste energy facility is, where our also our industrial pretreatment plant is. So we don't have to build a lot of new buildings. The dryer itself, a 42-ton dryer a day, is about a $4.8 million piece of equipment. So what we're looking at is heavy capital and not much of the building, just one piece of that equipment is that much money.
So when you said one of your townships, what's the they don't want to be part of this
No, we
project,
just ask
or?
People to do resolutions for us.
I see.
That's and, you know, we've gone out to the larger communities at first and then talked about this regionally with our county and the Wisconsin counties as well to process the waste that way. What we had a problem with was when we were trying to land apply is maybe I should clarify that. When we tried to land apply about 10 years ago, a township did not want the Class B product. They did not feel it was safe. The Class A product removes 99.9% of the pathogens, which makes it a fertilizer consistency.
So then you're going to – is it going to be something you can sell? Or?
We could sell it. We haven't got to a business plan to that extent. What we would look at is to try to use it on municipal-owned parks, golf courses, ball diamonds, those kind of things where we could reduce the cost of chemicals. It's high in nitrogen. It is it what makes your grass green. It's nitrogen. That's what it is.
It's a good project, Madam Chair, and well worth $5 million. Investment.
Is anyone else in Minnesota doing this at a waste-to-energy facility?
No, this would be the first of its kind and possibly in the United States. That's why this is a rather unique project because of that ability. Our steam customer operates only 5 days a week. So on Saturday and Sundays, we have no use for that steam other than we heat their building when they're not there. And, of course, the summertime, that's not a possibility. So we have this excess steam of running when we run with the incinerator, which is also taking care of our municipal solid waste. You just heard about the landfill in Washington County. We're trying to move up the state hierarchy on processing waste and processing biosolids to make a more environmentally friendly product.
Great. Thank you. Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Mr. Moskwa, I thought I heard you say something about Red Wing shoes and a tannery.
Oh, yeah.
What was the connection there again?
Yes, the SB Foot Tannery has been on this site since inception, I believe, since early, mid-1900s. They've been on this site, the same site as we put our waste energy facility in the early 80s. The SB Foot Tanning Company now is owned by Red Wing Shoe Company. They make the leather for the Red Wing Shoe Company.
Is that your regular steam customer then?
Yes, or? The SB Foot Tannery is our steam customer.
Okay. Senator Dill, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Mr. Moskwa, does that tannery process any horse hides?
Horse hides?
Yeah.
No, not that I know.
Senator Murphy?
Madam Chair, I worked there for a while, and when I worked there, we processed everything. But they cut way back on everything but cowhide, Senator Dill. I think they still have some specialties that they run through every now and again, some elk, deer, a few other things. So, why did you have something in mind? Do you need something tanned? Is that what I'm asking?
Senator Dill?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, I have this resolution up this afternoon that deals with horse slaughter, and I just thought it might be interesting to note that there's still a demand for horse hides in this state. if they were still using it.
They're not making Red Wing shoes out of horse hide, I take it.
No, ma'am.
Uh-oh.
Red Wing shoes are real.
The only shoes made in America, right? The only ones left, pretty much.
This is the last Union shoe made in America.
And the tannery is one of the last tanneries in the United States of America as well, at that size. I believe there's one other of that size.
Very good. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Murphy or Mr. Mosqua?
Yes.
What is the effect of this technology on air quality and particulates in the air?
That's a good question, Senator. At the waste energy facility, we meet stringent standards of air emissions. Some of the most stringent air emission controls of any industry. We have some resource people over here if you wish to ask them. The actual drying of the sludge would be no effective emission on air or anything like that. It's a steam would be going over to heat the dryer. So the process is there's condensate that we create. The steam goes over, would heat the sludge and dry it, and you just have a return. You have a closed-loop system.
All right. Well, I was, the bill calls for the deed to oversee this, but I wonder if we should just ask the PCA, have they reviewed this project? Are they familiar with it? I'm not sure why it's going through deed instead of through the PCA, if there's some reason. Anybody want to comment? Since they're all here.
Madam Chair, Deputy Commissioner Tim Schirkenbach from the PCA. Deed is because of often this type of money is handled by them because it's kind of a economic development type of funds in that. So that's why they would, it would still have to go through the permitting. So this, we definitely cover the waste energy facility and any portion of this project that would be a potential pollution source. So we'd still deal with it regardless of whether the money side is handled by deed.
Do you have any other biosolids from waste to energy plant? Wait, the biosolid comes from the municipal
wastewater
burner.
Treatment.
Or from the wastewater treatment. Okay, that's
yes,
where I
yes,
was getting mixed
yes,
up. Got it.
Yeah.
That's probably why it's indeed also. So that, do you have any other facilities like this in Minnesota? Well, you said there's not another one like it. So do you permit other biosolids drying facilities that you're aware of in Minnesota?
I'm not aware of any others that are like that. But maybe
Hutchinson, yes.
Mosqua.
Hutchinson has a drying facility. They put in a dryer. The city of Hutchinson, they put in a dryer to try to do the same kind of, but they haven't used natural gas, and with the natural gas prices, they've cut way back on their drying because of the cost to do it. It's a very expensive proposition to use natural gas.
Sure. So you've got the wastewater treatment plant, the municipal waste-to-energy burner, and the biosolids facility all together as part of this loop.
Yes.
And the tannery.
Yes, and it's interesting.
Complex.
It's interesting, Senator.
Okay.
What we've done is also purchased, we're in the process of purchasing two tanks from the tannery. They are hooking up now finally to our city water system. They had two large tanks of 300,000 gallons capacity. We're in the process of purchasing them so that we can have those in a tank. We'll have the biosolids into the tank, and that's where we store the biosolids till we dry it, till it comes out into a dry form.
Hmm.
It's a real collaborative effort amongst many different entities, public and private.
You know, Senator Murphy, I've tried to get some bonding dollars to do a wastewater treatment reuse project to try to find ways for industrial reuse of wastewater, of the water itself. Is that something that would work at your, anybody need water in part of as part of this processing?
It's interesting, Senator. Xcel Energy also has a waste energy plant that is, Senator Murphy's old business that where he worked. They are just down from our main treatment plant, and we have had discussions with them about sending our reused wastewater to them because they're having some permit discussions about how much water they can take out of the Mississippi River. That's a way bigger part of this, and where that would end up, I wouldn't venture to say, but we have had discussions with them on that kind of a reuse.
Right. All right. Are there other questions from the committee? Senator Kubley, Mr. Schirkenbach, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Well, Senator Murphy or Mr. Musqua, either one, you know, is this, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot about projects that are ready to go. Is this one ready to go? And, you know, how quickly would this be, you know, ready to let bids on if this were to be approved?
My feeling is late 09. What we really have to do, we've acquired the tanks. We have to do some piping. County Road 1 is under construction. We will be doing some construction work to get our piping to those tanks. The biggest thing was how long it would take to procure that dryer, a 42-ton-a-day dryer. The building is already there. It's not building a new building. It's utilizing our existing facility. So to get the equipment bought would be our biggest stumbling block. Operational would take into 2010.
Yeah.
Senator Cooley.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Musqua, you know, I guess I'm wondering, you know, if it can be, you know, if the contract can be let or contracts can be let and get the project going before the deadline on the federal stimulus dollars, might it look better if you took the word design off of line 1.7?
Yes, that's probably true. Can I comment one thing about federal stimulus dollars as well? Our four council members and a mayor are going to Washington, D.C. this Friday and are going to meet with Senator Klobuchar. She has put this bill down as one of the things she is looking at as well. When we asked the senator to do this, we've asked for excess money because then we would take in all those communities that we were talking about before and put in two dryers, and now the cost becomes about, that's where we get to about the $9 million cost. What we really are looking for from the state is we have no option for our biosolids right now. We're hauling it to Ellsworth, Zimbrota, and Cannon Falls. We're creating more traffic on our roads, more emissions, more carbon. We need to have a way to manage this waste now and into the future.
All right. Very interesting project. Thank you. Senator Murphy, do you want us to, I mean, we're going to send a letter to Senator Langseth to recommend bonding projects, and
right.
Is that what you're looking for today rather than moving this as a separate bill, I presume?
Yes, Madam Chairman, and I like Senator Kubley's idea about taking the word design out of, on line 7,
okay.
Losing that word.
Well, I'd make that motion, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Kubley moves to delete the word design, comma, on line 1.7. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
And, Madam Chair, that'd be perfectly fine if you want to hold this in the committee and make this part of your recommendations to Senator Langseth. That'd be wonderful.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on Senate File 46?
Is this the first bill?
All right. Senator Kubley, would you like to move that? I guess we'll make a. We'll have. On this bill?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Basically, if you don't. My name is Colleen Nixon. I live in the city of Minneapolis. My particular concerns date back to a time when I worked with the Sierra Club putting up a conference on low level radioactive waste in the Kiske Valley. Sierra Club attorney, physicist rather, Marvin Resnikoff, I'm not certain of his first name, a corporation there wanted to incinerate radioactive waste. What he brought to the attention of the public, and I don't know the contents of the sludge, so I can't comment directly, but I'd like to have someone give some thought to, if I may. Radioactive waste does not burn, goes into the atmosphere and comes down. I saw studies later done by the state of Minnesota. The parameters of the study were such they defined the problem out of existence. So, two things. I'd like to know the content of the sludge. Another issue, private public funding makes it much more difficult for citizens of any community to understand who's responsible for what. and that causes me some concerns. Thank you. Those are all my comments.
Could you just tell us your name again for the record, ma'am?
My name is Pauline Nixon.
Yes,
I would add, I've been involved in environmental activities, whether I like it or not, from the late 1960s when my former husband put together a water pollution case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, set a precedent for public citizen participation. My master's degree is in public administration. My concentration is public policy and management. I wrote a 60-page policy seminar paper on acid precipitation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nixon. Appreciate it. I presume that no radioactive material would be permitted in your facility.
Two things to clarify. We're not burning the biosolids. We're drying the biosolids. Biosolids are your everyday municipal biosolids that we all create ourselves each and every time we go to the bathroom. I want to, if I can make one other comment. I've gone around to many city councils now, and I ask for two things from them. And you don't hear this from too many people, and they usually won't admit to it. I ask for their garbage, and I ask for their you-know-what. We feel that we're a regional center, and we have the opportunity to do something here and make a good statement that helps everybody that's in these small rural communities.
Thank you. Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Moskwa. If you're recycling your water for human consumption, I hope there won't be enough to go around.
No, we're not looking at that. Thank you. But it is in the, if you look in the trade journals, there's more and more scope of that coming about.
All right. Well, it's been a very interesting discussion. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
I think, I don't know if we actually need a motion or not, but we'll just lay this bill over for recommendation to Senator Langseth's committee.
Thank
and
you, Senator.
I suppose we should take a vote on that. So, Senator Kubley, do you want to make that motion?
I'd move that Senate File 46 be laid over for consideration for the Capital Investment Committee and that it be included in a letter sent to Senator Langseth.
Thank you. On that motion, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Murphy.
Thank you.
Mr. Moskwa. Oh, I'm sorry, as amended. Yeah. Senator Stumpf, we're ready for you.
Right. You may want to just mention that.
Oh, that's good. Okay. I said it, even though I said it late. That's kind of done this in a year. I forgot what to say. Probably better to vote. I suppose people like it when you take a vote for the project. Right. Senator Stumpf, are you ready to go? We almost took the bill without you, so you got here just in time.
I'd like Mayor Rosal and the city administrator to join me. And Madam Chair and members, this is somewhat of an ongoing proposal. Senate File 974 is still dealing with funding for the flood protection of the Roseau community. And it's a result of 2002 flood, and they've made tremendous progress in restoring the community. And what we're asking for is the funding to help match the federal funds that will finish a diversion around the city of Roseau to give it the final protection that that everybody feels they need. So I will turn it over to Jeff Pawlowski, who's the mayor of Roseau.
Great. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for coming down to St. Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Jeff Pawlowski, and I'm the mayor of the city of Roseau. And like Senator Stumpf said, we're requesting a kind of a first-round appropriation. There's a three-part, three-phase part to our project, and I have a packet. You should have a packet in front of you, and I'll go over that real briefly in a second. But just some background is this is a three-phase project that is basically shovel-ready to go on first phase. It's a very complicated project, being that there's a federal and state component with the Corps of Engineers. But I'll just stick to the basics today, and maybe we can address some of them when we go through the packet. But anyway, like Senator Stump said, I'm here representing the city of Roseau. We're about 360 miles north of here. We're a very progressive community with a population of about 2,900 people. Proud to say, one of the few cities in northwest Minnesota that's actually holding our own, if not growing in population. And we're proud of that. We're the county seat for Roseau County, as well as the proud home of Polaris Industries. I also brought our community development coordinator along with him because he knows all the answers for all your questions. But anyway, this project is directly related to the devastating flood that we had in 2002. It's almost 7 years ago. It's hard to believe. But it completely wiped out the entire city of Roseau. We had about just under $100 million in actual documented damage. 85% of our residences were impacted, and about 90% of our business community were wiped out. So to date, we've had a lot of support from both the federal and state government agencies, you name it. We've completed over 53 FEMA projects, housing projects, two major flood mitigation projects in addition to the one in front of you today. Over 70 homes bought out and demolished. Our city facilities were replaced. The best we can figure out, approximately $60 to $65 million in projects, both federal and state and local dollars, put into rebuilding our community. And the one piece of the puzzle remains to be had, and that's the project in front of you. I can't stress the urgency of this. We've been delayed because of federal funding. We're optimistic, or we're not. We're pretty certain we're going to get federal funding this year. At least that's the plan. We have had two major flood events. Well, we don't call them flood events unless we actually get flooded up there. We call them high water events now, a new term. But we had two nail biters in 2004 and 2006, and it sounds like we have another one on the way this spring. So anyway, we are ready to go. I'll go over the packet briefly. Page one gives you the project cost estimates, just under $30 million. The federal share of that is about $16,400,000. The state local share is about $13,300,000. The project schedule, which has already begun, this project actually was begun in 2003 when the Corps implemented a study to an economic study, and then it went into a feasibility study, which took about 3 years. And there's actually been about $2 million in funds already expended on this project. The project was authorized by Congress in November of 2007. And like I said, we've been awaiting federal funding since that time. The goal is that to have the three bridges constructed in this project, two by the city, which we're responsible for. It's a state highway bridge, and the other one is a county state aid highway bridge. And one will be constructed by the Corps of Engineers. That is our plan to get done this year. There's a footnote on the bottom that says we do have some dollars available committed to this project, and we have about $1.25 million available for the remaining land acquisition necessary to build those three bridges, that is an ongoing process. So the three bridges get built this year. The actual channel construction gets built next year. And the restrictor structure and all of the other features to the project to complete it, the Corps will finish the following year in 2011. So best case scenario is we have a functioning project 3 years from now. So the breakdown, what we're asking for is $7.75 million for this, for 2009. Again, there's highway bridges of $3.2 million. We have to relocate some utilities for $500,000. and the balance of the land acquisition, which is required not for this year's construction, but for we have to acquire it this year so the Corps can build the channel in 2010. Okay? So that's where the total breakdown is. On the bottom of that first page is the state-local share breakdown only. But the federal side is, I didn't just have a brief breakdown of that on page 3. What's happening here on the federal side is we're one of the 8,367 earmarks that's currently being debated by the Senate Appropriations Bill, or whatever that number is. But and it's not what that would allow two things. It would allow us to sign a project, our final project agreement with the Corps to start construction. And it would also, the most importantly, we would then be considered a previously funded project and would be eligible for federal stimulus dollars that the Corps has recently received for projects on a high priority level, of which we certainly are in the St. Paul District. And that's why we've also included letter. There's on page 4, there's a map of the project. It's a 4.5-mile diversion, which would actually split the river, Roseau River, which is the third largest tributary to the Red River. It would split it around the city and would give 100% flood protection to the city of Roseau. So instead of sweating 3-inch rainfalls and more than average snowfalls, we would actually could get on with life as normally, we're hoping. So along with that, I have on pages 5 and 6 some goofy plan sheets here. The reason I included these is we are ready to go to bids on those two bridges that we need the $3.2 million for. The Roseau County, MnDOT has deferred construction of those, administration of those bridges, and those are ready. Those are the plan sheets showing that we are ready to go to bid as soon as the money is secured. And then finally, we have letters of support from Colonel Christensen, who's the head of the St. Paul District here, and also from Senator Klobuchar and Congressman Peterson as high-priority projects. So we're hoping, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're hoping this whole thing comes together so we can actually move forward.
All right. Thank you very much, Mayor. Are there questions? Did you want to testify as well,
sir? Only if there's questions.
Okay. Can you explain, maybe Senator Stumpf or Mayor or whomever would like to, the reference in the bill in paragraph C to the local share formula, and what does that all mean?
Madam Chair, that's a very good question. This came about after the 1997 floods in the Red River Valley. Mm-hmm. What it does is normally on when you have a core project, it's a 65-35 split, of which the 35 is 25-10, I believe. And what happens is for small communities, there
so
is...
So who does the 65 and who does the 35?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Who does the 10 and 25?
Okay. Normally, the federal share would be 65%. The state and local share would be 35%. And typically in Minnesota, that's been a 25-10 split.
So the local community would be 10.
Right. And what's happened through... because of the devastating damage in 1997 when the Minnesota Recovery's Task Force was formed, it was like no way could the local units of government come up with a 10% match. And so there was language initiated with that time, which was called the 2% language. What it does is your 2% of your household income times the number of households. And so that number was determined for the city of Roseau following our flood in 2002 with the special session. The 2% language was applied and it's been carried forward. There were other 6 or 7 years we've actually had legislation in since that flood. And what it did is it set our local share at about $830,000. Okay? And of that, so far, we've worked with Division of Waters, with Kent Lacusmo's office at the DNR, and to date, the best we can agree upon is that we still owe $450,000 of that local match, and that's why that has been committed to this project as well, and the city council has been budgeted $450 last year. We budgeted $450 this year. We're hoping to spend it this year.
Do you have a special levy for that?
Well, Madam Chair, flood recovery is a messy ordeal. It's before the flood, the city of Rosa, we're pretty conservative. We had about $5 million in reserves. And when we went into business, when we started our budget in the beginning of 2006, we owed the local bank, or we were maxed out at both banks. So we were not only had zero reserves, but, and so far, because we have to, you have to front all the costs of, and we're not complaining because we had wonderful support, but you have to front those costs, and then you hope you get reimbursement from the agencies, okay? So it's risky, messy, but it worked. And to date, we've gotten almost all of our reimbursement back from FEMA, federal EDA. The list goes on and on and on. I think we got about a $2 million reimbursement from FEMA this year, which was, or the end of last year, which was tremendous. So is it a special levy? No, but it's certainly the number one priority of the city council, and we aren't doing any other projects. We're not, everything is on hold until this project gets built. So is it a special levy? I don't know. It's our general levy is about our overall levy is about $1 million, of which a third of that is debt service. So yeah, it's a huge chunk.
So your share is under this formula is $830,000, but with this bill, if you are able to get the bonding dollars, the state will pick up about half of that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the what we've determined so far is we've already committed about the $380,000 to our other flood mitigation projects that we've done. We've completed two other major projects to date, and so that's the best we can. Maybe Todd could add to that. He deals with the DNRs.
Sure.
Madam Chair, with regard
to
identify
yourself, please.
My name is Todd Peterson, the Community Development Coordinator for the City of Roseau. With regard to our local share, as the mayor stated before, this project's been ongoing since 2002, and what the DNR has credited us to date is about $300,000+, and the $450 is what's remaining, and that's been approved in our levy for our general fund to be spent this year.
All right. Are there other questions from the committee? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just a little curious about this project. Of course, it was a huge project so many years and just total devastation. And I'm curious as to, you know, what the city, how the city makes a decision about diverting a river versus relocating. And if you could tell me a little bit about, is that cost-related, land availability, or all of the above, or you did a mix of the two?
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Torres Ray, what happens is part of the fees, first of all, the Corps of Engineers does a feasibility study, and they can only, the Corps can only participate in a project if there's a cost-benefit ratio of 1-to-1. So there has to be at least $1 of benefit for every dollar spent. So what they do is a study, which ended up being about a 3-year study in our case, to determine is there a project out there that would warrant the federal participation. Is there a project that would have a 1-to-1 cost benefit ratio? And if so, if there are a number of them, what is the best bang for the buck? Okay? And so there's a whole process that the Corps goes through, and through that process, they looked at, I think, 11 alternatives, and from levees to diversions to cutoffs to, I mean, it was a massive undertaking, and they determined that this, we call it the East Diversion Project, would be the most cost-effective and yet still meet the goal of providing permanent flood protection. And it does have a cost-benefit ratio of 3-to-1, which means for every $1 spent, there's $3 in benefit. And that's important because that's what the Corps uses to prioritize their projects.
That's a good question. Thank you. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in this analysis, would you say that there is also there is a cost analysis, but is there also an environmental analysis that is part of this conversation? And is that part of the equation or not?
2%.
Madam Chairman, Senator Torres Ray, they evaluate when they do cost benefit, they use all recreational components, environmental components, as well as cost value of structures. So all three of those are included when they come up with their 3-to-1 cost benefit. They look at all benefits, and there are components that are included in the project that are strictly environmentally related that they are taking benefits and calculating those in.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Stumpf and our Mayor Palauer, Mr. Peterson, last year's bonding bill, you got some state bonding last year. Is that, which part was that for?
Madam Chair, yes, we were here last year asking for about the same amount of money. The project has the way it's been configured has been changed a little bit to make it more efficient. But what happened is we were not able to secure the federal funding in last because there wasn't an 08 or the 09 appropriations bill didn't get passed and was supposed to get passed, and so we were not able to sign a project agreement. So we're not able to access any of the monies. If there were any appropriated to the DNR on our behalf, we were not able to access any of that money.
So you couldn't just ask for those bonds haven't been let or issued or whatever the term is at all. The state bonds never were issued for this.
Madam Chair, committee members, the way it works is that the bonds that go into these projects create a list of many different projects across the state. And so the money that could have been used for Roseau maybe got used by some other community.
Okay.
And not every community project or flood impoundment project has a core connection. Mm-hmm. Lots of times those projects are strictly state funded, and those generally can go ahead. But with the core project, you have to have, first of all, they require a lot of requirements on the federal side, and then you get on a list, basically, and then Congress has to fund it. And so it's been a little bit difficult to match up both the congressional money through the core funding and the state funding. The state has been very good. I mean, they've always been there. But now I think the United States Senate is voting on it tomorrow.
Today.
Wow.
They have already. Has anything heard?
You guys better go to Washington quick. Yeah.
We've been there, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. So is there anything happening upstream to try to reduce the flooding risk?
Madam Chair, that's an excellent question. Mr. Harnack is here as well with the Red Board, but there are in the Roseau River Watershed District alone, there's been 17 impoundment projects identified upstream, and Todd can maybe give some more details, but I know one has been constructed since the flood, another is ongoing, and there's also the Hay Creek project is awaiting funding in this session as well, which is directly related to this project. So yeah, with the city of Roseau's worked closely with Roseau County and the Roseau River Watershed District. We're all in it together, and if we could get flood protection through the whole channel of the river, that's ideal. So yeah, we're absolutely, we've had a very active committee that's been working on the whole system flood control as well.
All right. Okay, great, thank you. Other questions from the committee? Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mayor, I guess I'm wondering, you know, how much protection does this give the city? It seems to me that in the times I've been up there, it's been relatively flat. So I guess, you know, I mean, how much protection do you get in terms of reaching a point where, you know, the flooding will still come in? I assume it will come in from the south, if I remember the direction of the river.
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, I'll take a shot at this, but a diversion has advantages over, let's say, a levee project, because there's, for example, we're diverting the flow around town, we have two containment, and there's also dry impoundment features along with this project. That would be kept dry unless there was a catastrophic event, for example. Whereas on a levee project, once you're overtopped,
you're over top. So there are advantages. The Corps is very conservative in their calculations. There's been a number of changes. The 100-year floodplain, the flows now versus what they were, we always talk in terms of pre-flood, post-flood, but pre-2002, those 100-year values were different than they are now as well. And you are right, it is flat as a pancake. So one of the issues we've had to deal with as well is overland flooding, and we did a major project in conjunction with the Rosa River Watershed District to help alleviate that as well. So, the Corps designs the projects, and we hope we get as much bang for the buck as we can. That's really in a nutshell.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you have a diversion project like this, is this a permanent thing, or does this just kick in when there's threat of a flood? This will show you my ignorance.
Matt?
It wouldn't be bad.
Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, Senator Rummel, one important thing to note that we're not diverting the entire river. The original channel and its original capacity will continue to flow through the city. The diversion only takes the peak flood flows off so that we'll have what the channel can ordinarily handle without any additional measures will still continue to flow through the city at all times, and only the flood flows will be handled by the diversion.
All right. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 974? All right. Senator Stumpf, would you like us to put you on the letter of recommendation to Senator Langseth's committee? That's pretty much what we're proposing for bonding projects at this
point. Madam Chair, I'd appreciate it very much, and hope that Congress or the United States Senate will pass legislation today, and then I think we'll put a lot of people to work.
Yeah, that's true. That would be great. Sure. Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, I'd move that the contents of Senate File 974 be included in our letter of recommendation to Senator Langseth's bonding committee.
All right. On that motion, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Stumpf. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate
Madam
it.
Chair and members.
And be careful if you're driving home.
I think we're
going to
make it.
Yeah, probably not today. All right. Well, we're going to bring the PCA back up. We still have an hour left of committee time, members, so we'll make the best use of it we can. See how far we can get through the budget. Welcome back. Your desk.
Do you need more room?
We're crowding in on her space. All right. Now, where did we leave off exactly? I'm trying to remember. Oh, the water? We're going back to page 10 of the budget book. That looks like where we left off last time, or where we're going to start. We didn't get there yet. So, are you?
Aren't numbered.
Well, go ahead, Mr. Schirkenbach.
Aren't numbered.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, I'm Acting Deputy Commissioner Tim Schirkenbach, and to my right is Lyle Mueller, who's our finance manager. What we had just gotten through was budgetary change items relative to the general fund reduction, and I had briefly covered the $1.15 million in each year of the biennium that would be reduced there, and we had talked about the idea part of it would be Clean Water Partnership grants, $850,000, but there'd also be a $100,000 reduction from the water program operations. And we mentioned that that would be those position or the position that we're talking about reducing has been eliminated. So again, the idea that would not no longer exist, so there would be no concern on supplanting as far as other money coming in. What we're on now is other budgetary change items, and this has the governor recommends a net increase of appropriations to MPCA of $4.5 million in each year from the Environmental Fund. In addition, the MPCA is also redirecting $900,000 annually within the fund to support high-priority programs and initiatives. So what you see here is some of the things that we would be addressing through maximizing our spending authority, and that would include things such as air emission, new air emission database, $700,000, $750,000 each year to implement recommendations of the climate change advisory group. We'd also have increased funding to SCORE grants. Those are going to counties for dealing with solid waste and recycling issues. And it would also direct $450,000 each year to continue joint power agreements with local governments relative to stormwater inspections and technical assistance. And couple things I wanted to mention here. This is really about appropriation authority, so increasing our authority. However, if $3 million in new fees, and this is the agency's proposed air and water fees, do not come to fruition, that affects this amount. And therefore, the agency would have to reconsider the appropriation amounts listed above. And the amount of reduction would occur relative to transfer from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund, and there would be a reduction of about $7.3 million. However, the key thing to remember here is the reducing the transfer of resources from the Environmental Remediation Fund does not indicate that we'd be stepping back from any of our commitment relative to Superfund or the closed landfill programs. What this really is the amount that we'd have left we feel is consistent with what we were spending in the previous 2 years. So basically we feel that in FY 10 and 11 would not affect our spending, especially on major projects such as the Washington County Landfill and the Western Lake Superior Sanitary Sewer District project. And those are things I mentioned when we were back covering the land program.
Okay, Mr. Schirkenbach, let's go into some more detail on that. So I'm looking at the budget, page 10, and, okay, you're proposing redirecting money from the remediation fund, and I think that's going into the environmental fund to cover some of this. Am I remembering that?
No, I will have Lyle go into detail, okay. But actually it's the other way. We're not moving money from the environmental fund to the remediation fund.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, Mr. Schirkenbach is right. In this proposal, what we're proposing is to reduce the transfer of resources from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund. And the reason that we're doing that is that as we were preparing this change item, and you can see that $3 million of the change item relates to both a request to continue the spending for the regulatory services for the biofuels, ethanol, and mining. And we are anticipating that over time there will be an income stream that comes into the environmental fund to help essentially fund and balance that appropriation. However, the level of uncertainty at the time we were preparing this budget precluded us from including that income in the governor's budget. So it is not in the budget. So in order to establish or identify the resources in the environmental fund, we reduced the amount of the transfer to the remediation fund.
Okay. So what has that uncertainty become more certain? What's going to happen to know? How are we going to know when that revenue is going to come in for the fees?
Madam Chair, I can take a stab at it. We are it currently is, or actually maybe I should have Director Hallback give you an update as to where that is in the process.
And that's the revenue that you're talking about. It would be the fees for those permit areas?
Yeah, that's that the we had. Increase in the air and water permit fees that mm-hmm. we're talking about.
And Myrna, how much,
I think, can give you.
How much are you projecting to come from those fees?
Roughly an additional $3 million per year.
More than that.
More? Okay.
Okay, Ms. Hallback.
At least. She will help clarify that, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Myrna Hallback, the Chief Financial Officer for the agency, and we currently have rules in the Governor's Office to authorize us to go to hearing in, we hope, in April, early May, to establish air and water fee permit applications, adjusting, including for environmental review, and that we anticipate collecting in the biennium $10 million. Because of the economics of the situation and not knowing exactly when things were, we were budgeting for this year at $3 million. But we have set the rules and the proposals to collect $10 million per year.
Okay. And when would that, if things move forward in a timely fashion through the rulemaking process, when would the $10 million start rolling in? Would that be in 2010-11?
It should start, Madam Chair, members, coming in August, we project right now, assuming that we have the timeliest fashion as we go forward. Once we are into hearings, we're no longer exactly in control of the process. The law judge sets how long people get for comments. He may require us to go back and adjust the rules to some extent. We, depending on what comes out of those rules, we may be required to come before our agency board, which requires public notice period and then appearance for the board. We are currently anticipating that the rules would be effective in August of this year.
I think we should see a copy of the proposed rule. Whatever it is, whatever documents you have available that you've presented, just to figure, so we are aware of what the breakdown of those fees would look like for that $10 million a year. And I'm wondering what would happen if we accounted for that in our budget. If we put that in the into the budget as a projection for 2010-11, how does that affect the rulemaking? Does it just override it, or does it? Can it work hand in hand with that process?
Madam Chair, members, double check with my attorney, but I don't think it does anything to the rule process. What it does is sets for the law judge kind of what you anticipate. Back in the early 2000s, I was kind of doing a similar thing with the feedlot rules, and we were passing law as we were finalizing those rules, and the law judge ends up looking kind of in tandem of what's expected. And then we get comments and questions from the law judge that way.
All right. Well, I guess we should just see the proposal and look review that in more detail. Senator Rummel, then Senator Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, partly just for background sake, do we have air and water fees now? Are these new? Or
it's all back.
Madam Chair, members, we currently have annual fees for both air and water. And water permits, for the majority of them, have application fees, not to the extent that these rules will require. And currently, no one charges at the state level for environmental review, so this would be a first in that area.
And Senator Rummel, I think we've given some guidance to ask the agency to move forward on this last year, but I don't remember too many much. We didn't put a lot of detail into that, but we just asked for them. In general, we've been trying to establish a position where, you know, the costs of permitting are covered rather than subsidized by the taxpayers, that they're covered by the proposers or by the parties involved to try to reduce those subsidy costs that we really are having trouble keeping, you know, covering in our budget. So the details of how they're proposing the breakdown of the fees, we haven't seen those details, or I haven't. So
that helps. Thank you.
Senator Dill?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Ms. Hallbeck, I saw these numbers, but I need my memory refreshed on them. What is the PCA proposing in terms of increases in feedlot fees? It's going from $300 and some to $2,100. Is that per year? Or what is the exact number, and what category of feedlots does that apply to? And is it for 1 or 2 or 5 years, or what's the deal?
Ms. Hallbeck.
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, the fees that apply to feedlots are for those feedlots that receive the MPDS or SDS permit, so those that have more than 1,000 animal units. And what we are recommending in the rule process is that it go from the current ones, so general permit fees would go up from the current $340, $350 to $620 for their 5-year permit renewal.
Madam Chair, Ms. Hallbeck, is it 340 or 350?
It's 350, Senator Dill.
Okay.
And it's 345 for the annual renewal.
Okay. So, and then it's still going to 650, and that's for a 5-year permit?
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, it would go to 620 if the rules were adopted as proposed right now.
And this is for the environmental review or for the permit itself?
Madam Chair, just for the permit itself.
Okay. Well, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Dill.
Ms. Hallbeck, where did I get that $2,100 figure from? Is there something in the system for that $2,100? Or is that for 3 feedlots at one time?
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, I'm not quite sure. I'd have to go back. The highest for feedlots would be the individual permit, and that would be 6 points times 310, so that would be 1860. So I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Well, if you could just give us a table of the proposed fee changes, that would be helpful. And we'll have that one in there as well. Thank you. Okay, so let me see. So you didn't count the... You didn't even count $3 million in revenues from these fees in your budget, did you?
Madam Chair,
you didn't count any of the...
That is correct. We did not count any.
All right. So you're just telling... So, okay. So this would be, if there was no additional revenue, this is what you would do in terms of the remediation fund. Okay.
That's the adjustment, yes.
All right. And then can you talk about what the other reductions are that are proposed in, let's see, $900,000 reduction... Or I'm not sure what that's for.
Actually, that's just the overall amount of additional spending that were appropriations is really like 5.4. So we're increasing 4.5 million in the appropriations to the environmental fund that we could spend, but we're also redirecting within agency spending 900,000. So there's other areas that we consider lower priority that we were moving money from.
But I don't. Can you tell us specifically what those changes are?
We have some listing.
We do have a list.
Go into that.
These reductions hit four of our budget programs. The first program that we're talking about redirecting, the water program, $383,000 per year, annual or biennial number, $766,000.
Kind of get out of here pretty quick.
Madam Chair, do you want a little detail as I go through this?
Sure.
That would mm-hmm. be required. In the water program, we're talking about eliminating 4 FTEs. Two of them would come in the communications area, but communications that relates specifically to water program work. One FTE in a business support area, again, directly linked to the water program, an additional FTE in a scientific or technical area where the work has been reprioritized and spread between other staff members in that particular area. In all of these areas, we're also, you know, if we are short a few dollars, we're also looking to reduce travel and training accounts, which is an effort that we started seriously in the current fiscal year. And so as we look into 10 and 11, we're using that kind of that lowered number as an internal planning number as we look at travel and training.
What's the lower number?
On this particular spreadsheet, I don't have a specific number related to travel and training budgets. It could be, you know, anywhere from 30 to 50,000 over the biennium. So it's a result of an effort that certainly has started a number of years ago to use to take greater use of the electronic tools that we already have invested in. The meetings by
video conferencing.
Some of the training and certifications that we do electronically as opposed to on-site and in-person.
So the whole budget for the whole agency would be 30 to 50,000 for that?
Madam Chair, I was linking that specifically to the water program.
Okay, that's the water budget.
Madam
travel.
Chair, this,
and how much
this,
of
this
a cut
is spreadsheet,
that?
This is a spreadsheet that we can share with
that would be
with,
helpful.
With Dan at the end of this, so you don't have to
write it all
these numbers down.
Sounds good.
The next budget area, the air program, we're talking about a reduction of 450,000. We have identified 2.5 FTEs. The first one is a pollution control specialist as an inspector. Second full time is an engineer position that previously worked in air permitting, half a position, a technical position, also in air permitting. Next area in the land program, 1.5 FTEs that worked in the above ground tank inspections and a half FTE in hazardous waste inspections. Again, in both cases, the work has been reprioritized, redistributed, and the agency is making decisions that these positions can be reduced. The last area is our environmental assistance and cross media program. The dollar amount, $280,000. Here to a full time FTE as well as a student worker, which obviously is a fraction of an FTE, and in both cases, putting different effort behind activities such as get the lead out or get the mercury out, which are activities mm-hmm. that you may have heard about before in some of our budget presentations.
So for these staffing cuts, are these actual cuts? Are these actual layoffs? Are you just moving people around? Will the work still be done or will it not be done? And will you be hiring new people to replace some of them? Do you have a hiring freeze?
Madam Chair, we are responding to the hiring hiring chill.
What does that mean?
Not quite a freeze that has been going on in all state agencies. Madam Chair, we would not be hiring behind these positions. That would be negating the whole point of the reduction exercise that we're talking about. In many cases, we're talking about finding ways to do work differently. And in most of these areas, these are vacant positions, so that we're not talking about layoffs. But these are, in fact, vacant funded positions.
Okay, well, I guess in the water area, we need to know if you're hiring similar kinds of positions with the new money.
Yeah. And, Madam Chair, and I think we're very sensitive to the whole issue of the supplant versus supplement. And in these areas, what Lyle was meaning by the idea of chill, we've looked at all the different vacancies we have, and we're eliminating a lot of the vacancies that we have. So they will not be filled. And finally, I should say, in a lot of these areas, I think we're always working on improving how we do things. So we're looking at, be it permitting, inspections, whatever. our efficiencies in getting things done and getting the same outcomes. But in some of these areas, there will definitely be either longer inspection cycles or less amount of overall work that's coming out. And so what we're trying to do is prioritize those areas that we have feel have the least impact on the environment and make cuts in those areas. But when you're looking at these reductions, there will be some impact on the overall outcome of our work.
Okay, I'm looking at the overall budget page on page 7 where it lists the TEs as for the current biennium 918 and 958, and then for the next biennium 963. So it looks like you'll actually have more staff on board in the next biennium, slightly more. So how does that work?
Can you address it,
Madam Chair? I would have to chase that those specific details down. Off the top of my head, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, maybe you could talk about the proposed. If we could get that spreadsheet on the cuts, and then talk about the proposed new spending, the air emissions database, the position the agency to respond to federal action on climate change and court challenges, and then the joint powers thing on stormwater management. And SCORE grants. Okay, those are the four new spending items I see.
Yeah, new basically appropriation authority is what we're looking for in those areas. And again, on the 700, we just as far as 700 each year to develop and implement new air emission database. That's just actual work that gets to be done. That will be, I think, through contracts and other things that help us get that work completed, and that's a critical need since the US EPA is shifting this responsibility to the state level. The 700 each year to implement recommendations of the Climate Change Advisory Group, again, that's also as we're working with the Midwest Governors Association, and also things will go into things such as diesel retrofits and those type of things, and also our work with the Attorney General's Office as we respond to federal action and court challenges. So we've estimated that this is roughly what we'll need in order to cover those type of activities. You know, it's hard to project exactly how that needle will rise. This is our best estimate of what would happen there.
I'm just wondering, are these similar? Didn't you have to do these things during the previous biennium, the current biennium? What's new that you're doing that you weren't doing now in those two areas?
No, actually, Madam Chair, the idea is the new air emission database is something new that we will be developing. We had done an air emission inventory, but now what we need to do is actually establish a different database system.
And what will that look like? What's that? And that's based on federal law requirements?
Yes. It's for us to have a new database, and yes, that's under the Clean Air Act and the federal requirements as far as what we need to do. So that's something that's there, and that's something we get. Again, considerable amount of money under the AIR program, but not enough to cover everything. So there is an understanding that the state will cover some of these activities.
And what's the purpose of that database?
Actually, that's, again, for us to do the all kinds of planning for the future and different modeling that we need to do to understand if we're looking at new sources or other things, understanding what the AIR impact will be so we know what are the sources. Okay, and as Mr. Sandusky, the environmental assessment and operations person, it also forms the basis for our air fees system, because basically what we need to do is understand how we appropriate the amount of fees that go to which emitter based upon, again, a database that allows us to do several different things for the different pollutants. So we need to understand what's the overall amount of pollution that's coming out, and how do you allocate that among the different air emission sources that we have so that we're allocating the fees in a fair manner that relates to the emissions that are coming out from the different sources.
So are you actually collecting new information from permitted sources, or are you just putting it into some kind of database?
Madam Chair, why don't I...
From paper.
Why don't I get Mr. Sandusky up here?
Sure.
And so he can help answer that. Sorry, I can't provide the information.
me alone.
You're on your own.
That's frequent. Mike Sandusky, Director of the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division. Number one, the basic platform for the emissions inventory is one of the few places you'll actually see in government where the polluter pays principle works. This is all reflected in the Federal Clean Air Act, including an inflationary adjustment in legislation. This fee collection is based upon the criteria pollutants that are in the Clean Air Act and form the basis of the funding for most of a lot of the air quality program. The trouble we're running into is that with all of the last several years' interest in, there are two problems, last several years' interest in global warming and greenhouse gas emissions, legislation from this body and more considered this year during this session would have us create inventories for global warming gases which weren't part of our platform previously. The second problem we're facing is a little more esoteric, and it's that some of our platform for our air emission fees database is actually dependent upon a regional planning, the RAPIDS group, the regional Great Lakes Regional Planning Group, and work they have done. Their support is no longer going to be provided starting next year. So we're trying to meet the challenge of reconstructing our air emissions database for the purposes I've talked about.
So are you, again, are you collecting information on CO2 emissions that you weren't collecting before?
We will be.
You will be starting when in the next biennium?
Yes.
Okay. And I don't know that we've mandated that yet.
There,
but that'll be part of a permit process to collect that information?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. And then will this database have information that's accessible to the public or to other interested parties?
Yes, Madam Chair. Actually, we have another platform that's accessible to the public called EDA, Environmental Data Access. And it's a multimedia access portal, so anybody can get to our water quality information, our air emissions database, as well as some, we're in the middle of developing, our groundwater database.
Okay, so I guess the only thing I'm understanding that's different is that you're going to start collecting greenhouse gas data.
Correct.
And putting that on your database. But you already have a database of
yes,
all the emissions. So
yes, we do. It needs to be reconstructed, Madam Chair.
I see. Okay. And what if it's not? What will happen?
Well, we're about to lose our support from RAPID, so that's a great question. I don't really want to contemplate it very hard. But we certainly an outcome would be, Madam Chair, we'd have trouble collecting our air emission fees that we collect based upon emissions. And number two, we'd have difficulty creating the databases that we're going to need in the future for global warming gases. Not only the typical global warming gases, but the high-potency global warming gases that I do believe this legislature has directed us to begin to collect information.
Yes, that's right. So RAPIDS is a who is that funded by? Well, that's all right. You don't have to answer that if you don't know. But I'm just so whoever was funding this, it was actual the technical work that was being done before is not going to be offered anymore.
Yes, Madam Chair, it was. I don't remember the name. I'm sorry, but there's a Great Lakes Regional Planning Group that put a lot of technical expertise and effort into supporting state databases.
Okay, and so is this going to be an ongoing expenditure? Sort of
the 700,000. Mm-hmm. This is a one-time.
For 2 years.
Yes.
700 a year, and then it won't be in the base, and then you'll be able to maintain it.
Yes.
Okay. Can you speak to the other 750,000 for the climate change work that's proposed here?
To some degree, Madam Chair, I'm sure you're appreciative of the fact that. In many different areas, we're pointed toward not only collecting more information, but actually focusing our efforts in a way that supports current programs. I'm going to give you an example. Maybe I can do that. For example, We are beginning to collect information from proposers of expansions and new facilities related to global warming gases. We need people to actually collect that information and analyze it and put it in databases that can be supported. That's one example. But that is occurring in a lot of different places. And we're understanding generically that the expectations on the agency regarding our ability to engage and make progress on global warming issues is going to increase, not decrease.
I'm sure you're right. I guess we just I just want to get a better idea of exactly what that we're going to see for this money.
Madam Chair, I'm sure we have detail that I just can't produce for you right now.
Is there anyone who could produce that for us? And I'm wondering about court challenges. Are there court challenges going on now or that you're anticipating in the next 2 years? It specifically mentions that. Ms. Hallbeck.
Madam Chair, members, as we drafted this, there isn't a number of specifics onto it. But what was happening at the time we were developing our budget were, as you might have seen, the core challenges in the state of Kansas relative to CO2 emissions and what we should do. We anticipate, as we have begun to look at CO2 and in permitting issues, that we're likely to see some of those same core challenges from either side, either when we require reductions for CO2 and that the industries might actually challenge whether we have the authority to do it, or for not doing it sufficient and the environmental groups moving us to there. So that was one component of that we anticipated. And when we enter those kinds of challenges, that would require us to really look at technical support in a different kind of authority with the attorney generals, because that will anticipate a lot of extra work on top of it and support staff for that. The other thing we anticipated was that coming out of this session, we had heard, and there appears to be a number of bills relative to climate change that we anticipated people would want us to respond to. And in fact, we have, and the bill has escaped me, but Assistant Commissioner David Thornton has been working with some committee members in the other House on specific bill that some of this money would actually support us to be able to accomplish what the representatives would want.
Well, so I'd like to see that. You know, we need a fiscal note on a bill, or we need something. It's just a little too fuzzy right
Madam
now.
Madam Chair, I understand, and we'll provide that for you.
Okay, thank you. That would be helpful. And if there's a bill, maybe there's a Senate bill that also would.
I think there is, but
I don't know what you're talking about. So
I know, and it's
just a little hard to.
We will provide that additional information, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. What about the joint powers agreements on stormwater management? What's that about?
For that one, why don't I get this is going to be, if you want specific information, Madam Chair, I think it's best to get the people to know the most. So I will get Lisa Thorvik up here from our municipal division to help answer this.
Ms. Thorvik.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Thorvik, municipal division director. In the stormwater program, we have specifically not hired a lot of state agency staff. Instead, we contract with local governments to be kind of our eyes and ears around the state, especially in urbanized areas where there's a lot of construction activity. And so they go out and they work with contractors on implementing stormwater best management practices. So we're keeping our lakes, rivers, and streams clean from sedimentation and excessive water through the construction industries. And we have we've been entering into agreements with about 9 local units of government, and this is to continue that into the biennium so that we can continue to partner and provide some funding support for local governments to help us accomplish the regulatory program.
Other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you. The other, Madam Chair, is, again, increased funding to the county SCORE grants. Again, right now, we are passing through $14 million per year to the counties so that they can basically help support their, basic solid waste management and recycling programs. And what we're looking at is increasing that $500,000 each year in the biennium, $1 million total increase. And we just think, again, because of the additional responsibilities they have as we keep moving forward on recycling waste management issues, that this is appropriate. Actually, right now, they are spending roughly about $54 million of their own dollars are coming at the county level that they are spending. So the state is contributing, but again, the majority of that burden and that responsibility is falling on the counties at the present time.
So how does this money get divided up? Is there a formula?
Yes. It, basically, we allow kind of a base grant amount that goes out to counties of different sizes. They have to provide us a, again, management plan so that we understand what they're doing. And then they also supply us information on how they're doing relative to recycling, relative to a number of different things that are covered in our SCORE report that we put together on an annual basis.
So is this going to be kind of an incentive program where if you're doing better at recycling?
Actually, Madam Chair, members, no. This is basically saying it's because the SCORE money comes on activity that's happening. That's our tax, state tax that's happening on solid waste activities. And since the majority of the responsibility for dealing with waste and recycling is at the county level, this is just passing that through at a base level. We do have basically the requirements are covered by our oversight of their waste management plans that they put together, which are supposed to indicate, you know, different requirements in the metro area versus outstate areas as far as processing and other things. But we work with them to set goals on what they're going to achieve relative to recycling, relative to waste energy and those type of things. Rick Mosca was here. We work and are having meetings right now with Goodhue County on their waste management plan, make sure that they're making adequate use of the waste energy facility in Red Wing, and also trying to get them to look at increasing their recycling rate in Goodhue County. So county by county, we work to oversee and review the plans that they put together or provide technical assistance as they're developing those plans.
Okay, so every county will get a little bump?
County will get a little bump as a result of this. Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
I'm sure, Mr. Schirkenbach, if every county is going to get a bump and you're not planning on changing the statutes, what about those counties that get the minimum of $55,000 per year? How are they going to get a bump? Because the formula is based on population. And for some counties, for some of the counties with smaller populations, they basically have to give them the $55,000. And if you use the same formula, I'm not sure how you get them any more money.
Boy, Madam Chair, I could look. I did, Madam Chair, Mr. Knopf, I didn't see a problem. It's a minimum that they get, and we feel that we can provide that additional money through the SCORE grant. So we increased it, trying to understand, we just increased it the last biennium from 12.5 to 14 million, and we just basically were allowed to pass that through. I didn't see a problem or a barrier, so we can get back to you on that. I'm not aware of any issue that we have to deal with.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Schirkenbach, the only reason is, I mean, there is a statutory distribution formula that's based on population, and I haven't worked with this for a while, but in 1989, I remember that there were a number of counties that would receive significantly less than the minimum if the minimum wasn't in place. And so if you increase the amount of SCORE funding without raising the minimum cap, I'm not sure how those counties get more money.
Again, we can get a response back. I'm having a problem. If it's a minimum that you can pass through, again, you can not seeing a problem with adding additional money going through. Again, I didn't see a problem that we had before. I can get Mr. Benke up here, who's from our Prevention and Assistance Division, to respond to that.
Let's see if he does.
Mr. Benke?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dave Benke with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I think Mr. Knopf is correct in that we may need to take a look at language. I remember when we reduced the amount of SCORE grants that there was a proportional cut in terms of the amount and the base that went to the counties. And if we need to make sure that there's a proportional increase to to that base as we're going through. We may need to change that language as well. And so we'll take a look at that and provide that in terms of an assessment.
Okay.
When
all right.
Did we have that? What was the problem when we increased it from 12.5 to 14? No.
Still in the same language.
Yeah, but we didn't have an increase in progress.
Madam Chair, apologize if I was wrong on that. We will take a look.
Can you tell me, so with the new, and I guess we'll get the more information about some of these, but how many new hirings or staff will be required? For the county, the SCORE one is just a pass-through, presumably.
It's a pass-through grant, Madam Chair.
And the other proposals for increased funding, presumably, will add some staffing?
We will get back and clarify if we see that. I think on some of these, it's not clear, again, as was indicated even on the pass-through on the joint powers and that, what we're trying to do is we're being very aware as we manage our positions and look at the idea of a sustainable agency that we don't add positions now that we would have to look at reducing later. So we're trying to manage our vacancy rate and others so we only have the number of positions we think we can support over time. So a lot of these, what we're trying to do is pass the money through or work through contracts so it doesn't create a long-term obligation as far as positions. And, Madam Chair, I think we have it down where you asked, and we will clarify the idea of the number of positions we're showing here in order to understand how they reconcile that.
Okay. All right.
What we can do is change to the additional item here we have is relative to the change item and the clean water funding. And again, this is an issue that you, Madam Chair, had talked about as far as the idea of the supplanting. And I guess I'd like to clarify, in our minds, and this may be, this is our assumption, in the past, again, we had one-time funding from the legislature to deal with the clean water program and especially the impaired waters, the TMDLs. And again, that funding goes away as of this year. So what we feel is that now to come have this new money coming in is not supplanting anything since the money goes away. And so I guess that's our assumption. So what we're showing here as far as the budgetary change item is the idea of the clean water funding coming in and looking at $12.9 million for FY10 and $24.3 million for FY11. And again, we think we covered and we'll be going into greater detail with Senator Rummel if she has hearing in her subcommittee. But again, we feel that this is going to help us deal with this whole watershed framework and it'll be fully coordinated with other state agencies. So again, we're getting some of the money, but some of the money is going to some of the other key partners in dealing with this. And finally, what we can do is go into the federal stimulus money. And I just want to say, Madam Chair, again, we are have a general sense, but things are still in flux until Congress finally acts, and we understand. But these are some of the areas that we see as a potential for getting money in as far as water monitoring and standards, wastewater infrastructure, green infrastructure, diesel retrofits, alternative energy. And the next one, the leaking underground storage tank program, Superfund, and brownfields. I should mention on some of these, though, we will be involved directly, but others and the last two that are shown here are examples of those that would basically be handled by somebody else. And, in fact, in the case of the Superfund, that money would be actually handled by EPA and would be going directly to communities or others and administered by EPA. We would be not part of that process of administering that money.
For the statutory appropriation.
For the so why don't we finish the change items that we haven't gotten to? We have some air and some air changes, it looks like.
The e-waste statutory appropriation.
Madam Chair, I think.
Oh, yeah, and the e-waste?
We handled those at the time, but if there's any additional questions, we'd be pleased to answer those. So.
Madam Chair, we do have additional change items that were not in the environmental fund.
Mm-hmm. I see some. I'm just turning
Madam
the pages
Chair, I see.
And
from
coming
our
to the air program. There's air emissions fees. I don't know that you've discussed those yet.
Madam Chair, we have not. There's three additional change items that we have not discussed. And one of the documents, and I'm not sure whether you have it in front of you, but we can provide it. We have produced a fact sheet that summarizes all of our change items, and it is kind of a handy narrative. The three change items would be on the second page, top of the right-hand column.
Okay, I think we did receive this at the last hearing, members. If you have it with the pie charts, it's on.
It's
in the budget books as well, members, in more details. Page 14 is where we're at. Go ahead, Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, thank you. The first one, and we made some reference to this in the conversation today, and that is that in statute, there is a provision that essentially acts as an escalator for the air fees, and so in the budgetary fund statements, as we prepare those on an annual basis, we do recognize the step up on an annual basis of the air fees into the environmental fund. What we do as an agency is come back to you and request and the incremental spending authority that matches up with the change in air fees on an annual basis. So you can see I itemized the step up of $167,010, additional step up of $427,011.
But you're saying that the increase in fees will cover that, or not? Did I miss? I misunderstood.
Madam Chair, that corresponds to the amount that the fees are going up. So what we're doing here is we're asking for increased in. Well, the ability to spend what the fees are going up.
Okay, but you don't. I'm just looking for. It doesn't show a revenue of 167 and 427. It just shows expenditure. So,
Madam Chair, that's correct because the revenues would already be included in even the current law fund statements. Okay. It would not be considered a governor's rec.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
The next change item is the continuing the e-waste as a statutory appropriation. And I apologize that we do have a separate page in the budget book on this where we give you the statutory reference. But when the e-waste bill was created, there was language in that particular provision that said, as an agency, we should be turning this into a direct appropriation in this biennium. However, because this is a fairly new program and the revenue stream is not yet very predictable, in other words, the first year of revenue in the program was less than we had expected. The second year in the program, the revenue was more than we had expected. We're not anticipating that things will even out until perhaps a couple more years into the activity. And so what we're requesting is a continuation of the authority for the commissioner to be able to spend the level of revenues that comes in under the program. The way this was written in the bill is that the spending was suspended at or will be suspended at the end of fiscal 9. So the revenue will continue into 10 and 11, but we will have no authority to spend that revenue.
Okay. So you're asking for authority to spend a certain amount or to spend whatever amount it is?
To spend the whatever amount comes in. It is, Madam Chair, it is contained in a dedicated appropriation mm-hmm. within the environmental fund. So we can very easily track what comes in and what we spend.
So I think it says here that you what you project your costs will be under this. The actual program expenses were $79,000 during the first year. Oh, but then $260,000 in 09? I mean, what's your projection for how much it'll cost in the next biennium to operate this program?
Madam Chair, I'm referencing the actual change item write-up, not on the fact sheet now, but on page 15. If that's it does have a little more detail. We're projecting our expenditures to be $265,000 in each of 10 and 11. And the reason that the expenditures are that high is that the revenues in the current year have come in at a higher pace than expected. We actually will end 2009 with a bit of a balance in the dedicated account. So we're actually spending down. There was a Madam Chair and members remember there was a provision in the legislation to provide grants to counties, and that's what some of the money will be used for as we kind of ramp down and stabilize the level of activity in the program.
How much staffing do you have to run this?
Madam Chair, there has been, I believe, I think about 1.5 FTEs have been involved in this program. We've had one individual who has had more of a general program focus, communicating with the manufacturers, the retailers, and the recyclers. An additional part FTE has been working on enforcement issues.
Okay, and so that's what you expect will continue, that level of staffing, or do you know?
Madam Chair, yes, we're expecting that.
And so most of the money goes back out to, well, okay, if you have 1.5 FTEs and it's all coming out of this fund?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, so that's got to be more than half the money, you know, that you're spending internally.
Madam Chair, the remainder would be, there may be a grant component to this as well. We can provide that information.
So I'm just trying to remember exactly how this works. So what do you're supposed to, the manufacturers submit the money to you based on how much they produce? Is that right?
Madam Chair, so I don't get this totally tangled.
I might be remembering it completely wrong.
We'll bring up.
Yeah, why don't we get Mr. Benke up here and talk about it. This has been one where, again, some of the initial projections on how much we've gotten a lot more coming in than we thought, but some of the projections as far as the overall weight sold or amount sold has been less. So,
Mr. Benke.
Madam Chair, Dave Benke with the PCA. The formula, you know, allows us to use money for the staffing resources, but anything after that needs to go back out either to grants, as Mr. Schirkenbach mentioned, or there's a provision that if we don't use it, it needs to go back then to the manufacturers. We didn't take in, I don't think, as much as, you know, would warrant a huge grant program, but at the same time, the staffing seems to be about right. This is the first year of the program where we've actually seen things come in. We did need to do a little enforcement to get the reporting and those requirements done. But, you know, we're seeing it kind of even out a little bit in terms of that. And so we still need to make sure that as, you know, progresses, we get some of the bumps out of the road in this one a little bit. There also are some issues related to the amount of materials that have been actually recycled. Exceeding the initial estimates, and so some of that has to be worked out as well.
Okay. All right, thank you. Any other questions about this? Okay, we're out of time. Well, we haven't really done any clean water funding, have we? Oh, and there's SSTS license fees. I guess we should do that real quick.
Last
time. Madam Chair, the last initiative relates to an increase in the SSTS license fees. Again, since we only have one sentence written on the fact sheet,
okay.
obviously have a very old version that's numbered page 1, which I don't think is right, but page 20?
Page 20.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, this relates to increasing an existing license fee on a particular population of companies that provide everything from the design to the installation of septic systems. In many cases, this also includes a license category that applies to businesses. Right now, it's capped, so a business could have multiple operators or licensees that are within the business. Currently, that rate is $200 for the fee, and that would increase to $400. On an individual basis, the rate would increase from $100 to $200. What's being proposed is that this increase in revenue would fund an engineer to work with this program, an engineer who would be working with the counties. This would also be used for some grant money to the counties that work on this activity, and to increase the level of training available to county inspectors.
So this is going to increase the total amount of spending under this program?
Madam Chair, this is a request for both new revenue and matching expenditures, or expenditures at the same level.
Okay, and so the additional work that we can see as a result of this, outcomes that are above and beyond what you're already doing are?
When we get, Madam Chair, we'll get Lisa Thorpeg up from the municipal who has this program.
Madam Chair, first, you know, we're doing the air and water fee rulemaking. In terms of the septic system program, these fees have always been set by statute. So when we looked at increasing, these are water fees as well. So when we looked at increasing water fees related to the septic program, we had to do it by statute instead of by rule. So that's why it's coming before you rather than in our rulemaking. We've had septic system regulations since 1994, and part of that was asking the PCA to establish a licensing and certification program for the professionals that, you know, design and install and pump and maintain septic systems. Well, back in 1994, you know, it was basically just individual homeowner systems. Over the intervening, you know, 25 years or so, now systems serve small communities. They've gotten much more sophisticated. We've revised our rules last year to upgrade all of the requirements. We now have advanced designer standards. So the level of sophistication for the professionals, for the agency, and for the counties are ramping up. And so there's more training, more certification, more levels that need to be certified. And we have not increased these fees since 1994. So the increases will add new revenue for this program. We will be hiring an engineer. We don't have any engineers supporting this program right now, but the bigger systems that now require nitrogen control and treatment, as well as engineering for groundwater mounding under these systems, we need an engineer. Plus, we want to provide counties a stipend so they can go to the training to get educated so they can meet the new requirements. Plus, this will help to pay for our staff that actually does the certification and licensing program.
Okay. So if we just increased the fees and used it to reduce the budget, the general fund, those are the things you wouldn't be able to do.
That's right, madam.
All right. Other questions? I was just going to ask Senator Rummel what her plan is for the Clean Water Subcommittee. Did you say that you're going to be coming to her subcommittee to talk about the Clean Water Legacy spending?
That's our understanding, Madam Chair.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll just defer that then from the full committee, and we'll get to that later.
since we're out of time.
Okay.
Great. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The meeting's adjourned.